Hey guys, I'm Eric McLean.
And I'm Kelly Gramlich. It's time to talk some ACC sports.
Let's go.
Happy Monday, everybody, and welcome into the Gramlich and McLean podcast brought to you by Traeger Grills. Eric McLean, we have a bracket. Let's go, as you would say.
Come on, KG. It is March Madness, guys. We made it. We are here. And coincidentally enough, this is our 60th episode. So kind of a big milestone. It's an honor to have it fall on March Madness, the bracket coming out. And guys, we are trying to get to 100 five-star ratings. Right now, I think we're at about 75. So if you guys go help us out, go on Apple Podcasts, drop that rating. It'll really help us out. And just, you know, tell your friends about the podcast. If you are a Virginia fan, but you have a cousin who's a Virginia Tech fan, they need to know about this podcast and check it out. So don't hesitate to share it with your friends.
Great point, Mac. And first of all, if you're a Virginia fan and your cousin is a Virginia Tech fan, you probably have had some squabbles, I would assume, some friendly family feuds there. But both your teams are dancing. So that was a very good choice, Mac. And feel free to leave us a review as well. We read these reviews and you guys are just awesome with what you say. And some of the names really crack me up. I don't know if these are like Apple usernames or whatever. X-ray Bart Dave, Dave or Bart. He said, these two former ACC athletes have outstanding radio voices, outstanding knowledge of the conference, and outstanding expertise of the sports, both men's and women's. They complement each other really well. Their show represents a fresh approach to showcasing ACC sports programs, players, and coaches. After 60 years of enjoying ACC sports, I confess that I enjoy hearing their enthusiastic voices and knowledgeable overview more than any duo covering sports. Well, shout out to X-ray Bart Dave. Whatever your first name is, maybe your name's Bart Dave. We appreciate you. What an awesome review. Just made our day. And yes, please go give us that rating. If you really think we're just 3 out of 5 stars, that's fine. We'd prefer 5, but we don't want you to lie. But if you rate it, you can help you other people find the podcast. And like we said, Mac, tell your friends, share it on social media. That's how the kids hear about things these days, Mac, on the social media.
If somebody could make a TikTok just kind of sharing our podcast, that would be
there we go. Because Mac and I don't understand that TikTok.
That's right. No, I tried and I just couldn't keep up. It was way too fast. A little housekeeping, guys, that we want to do before we jump into this episode. We're actually going to be releasing 3 episodes this week. Wednesday, we're going to have some more of like a coach's roundtable, if you will, with the men's to discuss their tournament. And then Friday, we'll be releasing another episode that we'll have a couple of ACC women's head coaches on to discuss their tournament as well. So very excited for this week. Kind of has that football vibes where we're going to do 3 episodes, but this week is big enough and it deservedly so. We're going to talk about it. Kelly, let's jump right into it and talk about the recap of the ACC tournament. And I think we have to start with Georgia Tech. And I think when you look at them, the run that they were on, the way they play, did they get some help from COVID and a couple of buys? Sure. But you have to win the games that you play. They did that. Moses Wright, ACC Player of the Year. Jose Alvarado, Defensive Player of the Year. Usher DeVoe, they all came to play. What did you see from Georgia Tech when they did get to be on the basketball court, Kelly?
Man, I saw one of the hottest teams in the country, without a doubt. I saw a team that knows exactly who they are, that's led by seniors, that's led by veteran players. Their heart and soul is Jose Alvarado. Moses Wright is maybe their most talented player, and he played really well against FSU. He was great defensively as well, 3 blocks. He really bothered Florida State. Jose Alvarado, he didn't shoot the ball as well, but he was their heart and soul, had 5 steals. He is a defensive mastermind. But also what I saw from Georgia Tech, Mac, was Michael DeVoe scoring the ball at an exceptional rate. Now, that's not shocking, okay? Michael DeVoe has been a good offensive weapon for Georgia Tech all year. But I feel like whenever we talk about Tech, we go probably Alvarado first, just because he's kind of the face. Alvarado, Moses Wright, and then people forget the other complementary pieces. Michael DeVoe is much more than a complementary piece. The way he shoots the 3, spreads the floor, attacks the basket, he is huge. So if Tech wants to make a run in the tournament, which I think they can, and we're going to talk about the first matchups for each of these ACC teams later on in the show, Michael DeVoe has to keep scoring the ball like he has been. So I thought he was really the X factor for Georgia Tech in the ACC championship game.
Yeah, and I think the game overall, you know, just the 80-75 victory, it was an impressive game, a game of runs, as basketball always is. I do think that it's a little bit of maybe disrespect, I'll call it, for Georgia Tech, only being a 9 seed. We'll dive into that a little bit more. I mentioned COVID and the fact that it hit the men's tournament pretty hard, caused Duke and Virginia to leave the tournament. Obviously, extremely sad for those student athletes for, you know, just having their sport removed from them and a chance to win the ACC kind of taken away. You know, I thought Duke was playing very well. And we mentioned just a couple of weeks ago on this podcast that look out for Duke. They can make some noise in the tournament. They were doing that. And then, of course, have to go home. A team that did get a play and a team that was very impressive was Miami, only losing to the ACC champion eventually to Georgia Tech, 70-66. I thought it was very impressive to see them. They only had 6, Kelly, scholarship athletes, really kind of playing a and-one mixtape, one-on-one, whoever's feeling hot, go take it and score type of deal. But what about UNC? Because these guys look dominant. The Big Four, Kelly, I think have a chance to really come together, grow, and make some maybe some chaos happen because they're playing in the Baylor bracket. They play Baylor second potentially, and I don't think the Bears are playing their best basketball. What'd you see from UNC in the ACC tournament?
Oh, Mac, I like what you're insinuating there. We've got to break that down and kind of get into it. But overall, you know, I think North Carolina played a better version of basketball than what they've played for most of the year, but they still were themselves, if you get my drift. They were still relying on the inside. Their guard play was up and down a little bit. RJ Davis played well at times, but in the end, the way that they were able to out-muscle some teams in that tournament, rebound the ball, that's what they do. That's exactly what they do. I didn't think they had enough from their guards down the stretch against Florida State, and that was the issue. And that is my concern. That is my concern, Mac, for North Carolina in their draw in the NCAA tournament, because Baylor has great guards. But, they got to get past Wisconsin first, so we'll tell you more about that matchup coming up very soon in this episode.
That's right. And last but not least, let's focus on FSU here a little bit. Pretty much gave away, and maybe that's too aggressive for me to say, but I think so. I mean, they were one turnover shy of tying the ACC championship game record. They had 25 turnovers. The record's 26. I thought that Scotty Barnes kind of did what I said last week and took over as the scorer. He led FSU with 21 points, but here's the problem. He had 6 turnovers, and Kelly, they were bad turnovers. I mean, just throwing the ball out of bounds, a terrible bounce pass to a 7'1" center. I mean, and that's just 2 or 3 that I saw that were just blatant. He's got to do better. But what did you see from FSU throughout the tournament?
I thought there were some freshman turnovers for Scotty Barnes, to your point. And, you know, in some ways, Florida State, they had the one game canceled and they still played before they got to the championship game where we know Georgia Tech sat there. So it's not like either team really had a disadvantage necessarily where one's just sitting around and the other one's playing. The turnovers were really troublesome. They're concerning, Mac. 25 turnovers to your point. MJ Walker had 8 of those. Scotty Barnes had 6. You have to give a lot of credit, first and foremost, to Jose Alvarado and the guards and just how Georgia Tech defended, especially Alvarado, all over MJ Walker, all over those guards for Florida State. So give them credit, but still, 25 turnovers, that's unacceptable in a championship game. I do feel like the way you said that, Mac, was pretty spot on, because Georgia Tech played well, but Alvarado and Moses Wright didn't go off or anything like that. They were able to capitalize off of those turnovers, and it speaks to that Florida State issue. And I know Cornette, he told us, you know, I'm not really worried about it because they have a bunch of weapons, even though they don't really have a true alpha. And he doesn't really like that word. But I think when you don't really know who's going to take over the game, when you don't really know who's going to settle you down out there, that's where you get some of these errant passes and these turnovers that just make no sense. So that was part of the issue for FSU. And Georgia Tech's defense is great. Let's give them some credit as well.
No doubt about it. And like you said, just going back to the lack of a true alpha, they have a bunch of very good players, but it's when you get in a rut, everybody's kind of looking at each other like, are you going to step up? Are you going to step up? Am I going to step up? And I think that is where FSU is going to run into problems in this tournament.
And really, if we're being honest here, a lack of a true point guard. like Scotty Barnes is trying to play the point. He's more of a point forward. MJ Walker, his true position is not point guard. And then you've got Jose Alvarado, who is just a point guard to his very core. And so that may be part of the issue too for Florida State, that they don't necessarily have a floor general that's out there getting everybody in position, getting everyone where they're supposed to be. But if you're FSU, you are kicking yourself. Just take four less turnovers, Mac. Four. And you probably win the game. You still turn the ball over 20 times, but you still would have probably found a way to win it.
It was a problem. I'm sure they'll figure it out and solve it and try to make some noise in this tournament. I actually was listening to the CBS broadcast, and they were saying, you know, if Florida State gets to that Elite Eight, Final Four area, and if it's against Michigan, a couple of the CBS analysts were leaning Florida State. So I think that just goes to show you the respect that that program has developed and kind of where they are. All right, KG, let's move on to March Madness. It's the most exciting time of the year. I've told you guys this time and time again, it's like Christmas for me for about a week and a half straight, 2 weeks. So it's very exciting. But before we jump into it, I want to tell you about our friends over at Traeger. Traeger is the only wood-fired outdoor grill that smokes, grills, barbecues, and even bakes. I used to think that you had to have different grills, different tools that were good for different things, but Traeger can do all of those, and it does it better. And that's why Traeger is the official grill of Gramlich and McLane. The fact is, nothing beats the flavor of food cooked over pure wood fire. There are endless possibilities on your Traeger, and it's so easy to use. You guys saw my boy EJ Manuel firing it up today on his Instagram. So he and I feel like a barbecue pro every time we do it. Find your local Traeger dealer today by visiting TraegerGrills.com/ACC. All right, KG, let's start with the madness. Let's start in the East. We just talked about FSU and some of their problems, but tell me why the number four FSU Seminoles are going to win against the 13 seed UNC Greensboro.
Okay, so you may not want to phrase all of them. Tell me why X ACC team is going to win.
You know, I'm going to pick and choose here.
Okay. FSU, I feel better about. Some of these down the road, I'll tell you. Some I feel great about for the ACC team, and some I just don't. But with UNCG, they're coached by Wes Miller. Some say he is the heir apparent to be the next head coach at North Carolina. Some say. He played in North Carolina, and he's done a great job at UNCG. They won the SoCon this year. They've really been, I'm not going to say they've ran the SoCon because Mercer's really good, Wofford's really good, but they're at the top every year. They've won six of their last seven. Their net is 84, just one quad one game, and that was a loss at Furman. So they haven't really been challenged. You'll kind of see that as a theme with some of these lower mid-major teams. The upper mid-majors got to play some non-cons, but lower mid-majors didn't really get to play anybody. So the resumes are a little suspect, but still, you win your league, you get in. They only have one guy that averages in double figures. That's Isaiah Miller. He does everything for them. He averages nearly 20 points per game, but he doesn't really shoot the three. He's a guard that does not shoot the three, and UNCG only shoots 30% from three. So I'm feeling good about Florida State in this game, Mac. In the opener, with a team that is a little offensively challenged, they don't shoot the ball well from beyond the arc, they rely on one guy. That sounds like a very good matchup for Florida State when you look at FSU's balance and how many different guys can hurt you. I think that FSU is going to be fine in this game. I would not predict any sort of trendy 13-4 upset here, at least from what I have seen so far. This is only Sunday night, but that's right. Where I'm leaning right now.
Let's be bold with some of these. I'm going to ask you this for every team. How far do you think FSU can get, or how far do you think they will get? Not can they, not magical, perfect world. How far do you think FSU will go?
I think this year's FSU team should be a Sweet 16 team. Now, beyond that, I know some of the guys are liking the Michigan matchup. I'm not super sold on that. So I think, the Michigan matchup is going to be very, very difficult. But if somehow Michigan loses early, you see that Alabama is the two seed there. Alabama's good. Don't get me wrong. They're very good. I just watched them win the SEC on an incredible Eurostep from Herb Jones, who is an excellent player. But I think this is a manageable bracket. It's not a Gonzaga bracket. It's not a Baylor bracket. And it's not even Illinois, who's playing really, really well right now. So I'm going to put FSU at the Sweet 16 right now. Just because of their issues, I don't think they're a Final Four team. I think Elite Eight is probably their ceiling. But when I look at this bracket, I see Alabama. I see Texas, who's hot. I see Michigan. I don't see FSU making the Final Four on this side. Just being honest, Mac.
I agree, but I'm going to go Elite Eight. And I think, like you just said, that's their ceiling. I'm feeling good about it. I think if Scotty Barnes can figure it out, not turn the ball over six times a game, maybe Final Four. We'll see. We'll see.
Just,
I might
just
say
three,
Final
Scotty.
Four
just three.
That's right. Just three. Just cut it in half and you'll be fine. All right. Let's go over to the Midwest, where it's pretty much the ACC conference.
Yeah.
Let's start with number eight, Loyola, versus number nine, the ACC champion, tournament champion, Georgia Tech. What are you seeing in this one? Because I might be leaning with Loyola here.
Well, Loyola's good. And first and foremost, this has to be, I know Sister Jean is probably not going to be in attendance because COVID policies, and she's, 100. But I'm going to need a cam in Sister Jean's house. I'm going to need like a Zoom where I just need to see her watching the game in the top corner of my screen. I'm a Sister Jean stan.
You gotta tell
love
people
Sister
why
Jean.
You're mentioning her. You didn't mention that this is the matchup between two lovable seniors and Sister Jean and Jose Alvarado. You missed the whole segment title.
See,
come on.
I tweeted that and I gotta say I was pretty proud of myself. We have one of the most lovable senior citizens in the world, Sister Jean, and then one of the most lovable seniors in Jose Alvarado. Two seniors, different types of seniors, but I feel like they would be great friends. I don't know.
That's right.
Just getting that
That's
vibe.
Right. And I bet Sister Jean and Coach Josh Pashner would be just best of friends. I mean, his voicemails, his words of encouragement, he's the bomb. I mean, I thoroughly enjoyed. Yeah, the destroyed face shield, that might set him back a little bit. But anyway, tell me more about this matchup.
Right. Georgia Tech, look. It's weird to see the ACC tournament champion as a 9 seed, but you have to look at Georgia Tech's overall body of work as Mac is shaking his head. They didn't really get hot until February, and they didn't practice in October, November. Pastner did not want to practice because of health protocols, and we understand, but they started the year, they lost to Georgia State, they lost to Mercer. This is not, a crazy impressive resume. Now, they did get some good wins down the stretch, so that's why they're a 9 seed. And Loyola's resume is impressive. Their net is 10. And I'm kind of trying to figure out how. Now, they beat Drake twice, and they're also a tournament team. But they don't have a bunch of super impressive non-conference wins. But their net is still 10, which is really good. Cameron Crutwig does it all for them. 6'9 guy inside, averages 15-7. He played an integral part on their Final Four team in 2018 when he was a freshman. And Loyola shoots the ball really well, 37% from three as a team. This is going to be a great game. I am still going to lean Georgia Tech here. And look, I'm not picking an ACC team every game, okay? You'll see that. But I think Georgia Tech, I don't know how to say this in not a cliche way, Mac, but I feel like they've caught lightning in a bottle and they've been able to put the lid on it. Like they've bottled it and they're playing so well. And they're one of the most cohesive units in the country led by seniors who don't want to go home. And I think they have a lot of momentum and a lot of confidence right now. It's going to be a good one. You've got to slow down Crutwig, but guess what? There's a guy named Moses Wright on the other side for Georgia Tech.
You've got the Ramblers. You've got the Ramblin' Wreck. I don't know how that could have worked out any better.
Writes itself.
But it did. That's right. For Georgia Tech, how far are they going? For me, it's two games. If they do get this win against Loyola, they're running into a buzzsaw in Illinois in game two. I think Illinois is playing maybe better than anybody in the country right now. Total body of work, I think it's Gonzaga. But right now, look out for Illinois. And that's unfortunately who Georgia Tech might have to play second.
Illinois looks great, for sure. Now, this is why I was telling Clemson fans you want to stay off that 8-9 line. Because even if you feel like your first game is winnable, which it definitely is for Georgia Tech, you're going to face one of these one seeds. And all of these one seeds have looked excellent. So you just don't want that matchup. I do think Georgia Tech can give Illinois' guards a problem defensively. But there's so much size inside for Illinois. You're right, Mac. I think it's a one win and then probably an exit for Georgia Tech. They just got a tough draw.
But a great year nonetheless. It'll be interesting to see. Like you said, defense, they say it wins championships. We don't know anything about that on this podcast. But I think I give the edge there to Illinois. All right, let's move on. Staying in this side, number six, San Diego State versus guess who? We told you all year these guys are going to find a way. Number 11 seed, Syracuse, the most bubblicious team in all of creation since the beginning of time. Kelly, just give me it all on this matchup because I'm so happy Cuse is in.
Syracuse is in, and we've got to talk at the end. We'll talk about Louisville not being in. I think in many ways, Syracuse kind of took that spot, as did Georgetown by winning the Big East and Oregon State by winning the Pac-12. But Syracuse finished strong and Louisville didn't. That's really the difference between those two teams. And Syracuse is playing really good ball right now. Cornette told us on our last podcast last week, Syracuse goes as Buddy Boeheim goes. And Buddy Boeheim balled out in Greensboro. He has looked so good. And really, ever since that Clemson game, that's been the catalyst for Syracuse. Their zone has looked better. Here is the bad news, Mac. San Diego State is really good. Their net is 18. They have won 14 in a row. They have wins over UCLA, Arizona State, St. Mary's, Colorado State, Utah State. Okay. They shoot 38% from three as a team. They've got two guys leading them in scoring in Mitchell and Shackle, who both shoot the ball well. I know that it's a tough matchup always when you see this zone in the tournament, but this is game one. You've got a whole week to prepare. It's not one day in between. I think San Diego State is going to knock off Syracuse. And look, well done, Syracuse. You did it again. You kept us on the edge of our seat for like 3 months. We didn't know if you were in. You are so entertaining. We love you for it. But I just don't see Syracuse beating the Aztecs in this opener, Mac.
I agree with you. I think Syracuse is one and done. I think Buddy is going to go off, and that'll be, you know, fun to see. Let's move on to number seven, the Clemson Tigers. A lot of people really all over the place projection-wise of where they thought Clemson was going to be. I think seven is more than respectable. I think it shows that at a conference matters. I think it shows that winning wins matter. And they're going against number 10 or the 10th seed, excuse me, in Rutgers, who, funny enough, a great friend of mine, Adam Goldberg, is now at Rutgers. So he went from Clemson to Rutgers. So this is the Adam Goldberg bowl here. tell me what you like in this matchup.
Well, Matt, can we take a moment to acknowledge that Clemson is the third highest seeded team in the ACC?
Come on, tell them. Tell them.
And you're right, Matt. It comes down to resume. Clemson has wins over both the SEC and ACC champions in Alabama and Georgia Tech. That is impressive. I don't know if that's ever happened before. I've got Timber Ray on the case. They also beat Morehead State, who won the Ohio Valley. So three
OVC.
Wins over.
Hey, yep. Don't sleep on the OVC now. There's some great basketball there.
No doubt. They've got some shooters in those leagues. And they've got those great wins for Clemson. They also have a win over Florida State. The wins really speak for themselves. So you have that seven seed. And I think this is a great, hear me, Mac, great matchup for Clemson with the 10 seed Rutgers. Rutgers, 38 in the net, four wins versus quad one. So again, it's the Big Ten. They've played a tough schedule. We know that. They beat Syracuse in the ACC Big Ten Challenge way back on December 8th. And then they beat Illinois on December 20th. I remember in December, people were saying, what's going on with Rutgers? Are they one of the best teams in the country? Well, they've fallen off a little bit. Just for a comparison, they beat Illinois on December 20th. They were blown out by Illinois in the Big Ten quarters, 90-68, just a couple of days ago. Now, Illinois is playing great ball, but it does show that Rutgers is a team that racked up some wins early and padded their resume. Honestly, maybe a little bit like Clemson. These two teams are in similar situations. Rutgers is led by Ron Harper Jr., averaging 15 points per game. They only shoot 31% from three, so not a great three-point shooting team. We know Clemson likes to win with defense and the three ball. If they shoot it like they did against Miami, Rutgers is not going to come out there and just drain shots like Isaiah Wong was for the Hurricanes. I am taking Clemson in this matchup. I think Rutgers is a team that peaked a little while ago. And Clemson, I still feel like they feel that they have a lot to prove. And maybe that Miami loss did them good in some ways. First of all, it got them out of Greensboro, so no more COVID risk. But it also, I think, made them a little hungry, just sitting there and watching Miami barely lose to Georgia Tech, then Georgia Tech not having to play Virginia. Could have been Clemson, possibly, in that ACC championship.
Which is crazy to think about. All right, give me, for the Tigers, what's their ceiling? How far are they getting in this tournament?
Oh, man. All right. I think this is a good draw. It's a good draw. I see Clemson beating Rutgers, and then you go up against Houston. And Houston is a team that can flat out score the basketball. If you don't shoot it well, if Clemson doesn't shoot it well, they're not going to win that game. And I think a lot of shooting the ball well in the tournament can be a carryover from the first game because you just have one game in between. And overall, getting used to the big arena or whatever arena they're going to play in, we don't know that yet. But I think it's possible that Clemson beats Houston, Mac. Right now, I would probably have to say Houston advances to the Sweet 16.
I think that Clemson is going to go as far as Amir Sims will take them. I think similar to FSU, Amir has to step up and be the alpha. He has to be the guy that can score it inside, outside, distribute, play defense. And I agree with you. I mean, Clemson loves to defend guys and light them up. If they get into that Houston game and can play confidently and can get all up in your grill on defense and cause some turnovers, cause some, just momentum swings, I feel good about a Sweet 16 appearance. If not, Houston, like you just said, they can fill it up really quickly, and it could be a short tournament for the Tigers.
Of all the two seeds, you'll take Houston. Because you look at these other two seeds, Alabama is playing great basketball, Iowa, Clemson doesn't want any part of guarding Luke Garza and all the shooters around him, and then Ohio State, who's also playing really well. So if you're going to be a 7, which is what Clemson is, I think you got the best possible draw, and I also think you got the best option out of all these 10 seeds as well. So a lot of positives for Clemson. Not saying they can't do it, Mac, but if I was picking it right now, just seeing not having seen the Houston-Cleveland State game, probably Houston, I think, is going to be in that Sweet 16.
I love it. I love it. Let's move to the South, where we have a couple of ACC teams here. Let's start with North Carolina, an 8 seed. And this is a pretty tough draw, but I think it does favor them a little bit versus a 9 seed in Wisconsin. Tell me what you're seeing in this and what we can expect from North Carolina.
I was kind of surprised when everyone was dogging North Carolina in this matchup on Twitter when it first came out. I think
can
this
I just
is
tell a, you something?
Oh, go ahead.
I tweeted RIP to my UNC friends just to fire up UNC Twitter. And
okay.
It worked perfectly. So that was all that was for.
Well, they are easy to fire up. We know this. This is something that everyone is aware of with North Carolina, and that's fine. It is what it is. That's what they do. But when you look at Wisconsin, you have a team that shoots the ball pretty well. Your top three scorers all shooting over 37% from three. So they can light it up. And of course, that is the concern for any North Carolina team. You don't want a team that can shoot. Well, unfortunately, it's the NCAA tournament. Most teams can shoot, just being honest. Now, I will say Rutgers might have been a good matchup for North Carolina in that regard, but they were an 8 and not a 7. Wisconsin's net is 26, 5 quad one wins. Again, it's the Big Ten, 5-10 versus quad one. They played 15 quad one games. That's kind of crazy. Wisconsin beat Loyola and Louisville in the non-con. Louisville went up there in the ACC Big Ten Challenge, didn't have Carly Jones, and got blown out of the gym. Wisconsin has lost 4 of their last 5. They aren't playing super well down the stretch. UNC is. I feel like UNC is hitting their stride. Overall, I'm not sure their ceiling as a team is that high necessarily, but I think they're playing the best ball that they can with the roster they have and how young their guards are and Kessler and De'Ron Sharp. I am leaning North Carolina here. I don't understand why everyone was saying, oh no, it's Wisconsin. Yeah, they can shoot the ball, but are they going to be able to rebound with North Carolina? Are they going to be able to be as physical and as tough? And if either RJ Davis or Caleb Love has a good game, if either of them can get going shooting the ball, it's just one of them. You really just need one of them. That's a very good sign for North Carolina. Or Kerwin Walton. He's got to get going as well. But I'm leaning North Carolina in this game, Mac. I don't really get the everyone's concern. Now, I do understand once you beat Wisconsin, if you do, you've got Baylor. And I do not see, you might think differently here. I do not see North Carolina beating Baylor just because Baylor has such great guard play. And that's where I think North Carolina's lack of experience guard play is really going to come back to bite them.
I think that the talent and skill level could be equalized in a tournament. I think when you talk about excitement, you talk about these young guys getting just juiced up, playing out of their minds, kind of like a Duke game for Caleb Love and seeing him play to that level. If UNC does get past Wisconsin and play Baylor, that's where I get excited. And I think the big four that UNC has, I think they figured something out in this tournament. And I think that they are going to ride that into the NCAA tournament. Nobody else in the country has that. Nobody else has 4 potential NBA type players, maybe 2 lottery picks like UNC does in terms of 7 footers. I mean, it's 1 5-star goes out, another 5-star comes in, and these guys can just do it in a bunch of different ways. I think that is going to be the biggest difference. I know that historically veteran experience guard play is the success for UNC. I think this year can be a bracket buster. I'm not saying Elite Eight, Final Four, but I think they can make some noise with these big guys. And then next year, if they can get some of these guys to come back, you know, look out for UNC.
Both Duke and UNC next year could be very interesting considering who comes back.
It will be something to keep your eye on. Let's move on, Kelly, to the 7-seed Florida versus maybe a little bit shocking to me and maybe you and some others, the 10th seed in Virginia Tech.
Oh, when I saw Virginia Tech out of 10, I thought, uh-oh, y'all don't know what y'all are doing, okay? That's what I thought about this committee. Now, I understand. Virginia Tech played a very easy ACC schedule. They benefited from some games being postponed and just the way the scheduling shaped up. It was very manageable. And some of their non-conference wins didn't appreciate like they wanted to. For example, the Villanova win doesn't look as great as it did back at the beginning of the season. But this is a very dangerous Virginia Tech team with Kaveh Aluma in the middle and all the shooters they surround him with. I still very much believe in Virginia Tech. And I think there are certain teams that maybe we are sleeping on a little bit because of recent COVID pauses. One of those, I think, is coming up next with Virginia, but also with Virginia Tech. Don't sleep on the Hokies. Come on, guys. Do not sleep on the Hokies. They are better than a 10 seed. And I don't think Florida is good enough to be a 7 seed. I would almost flip these in this matchup between Florida and Virginia Tech. Florida is, their net ranking is 31. They have 5 quad one wins, which is probably why they're up there. They lost to Tennessee in the SEC quarters. We know Keontae Johnson out for the season. That's a story that everyone knows about. He was going to be their Mr. Everything. And so you have to credit them for how they have played without him since he has been out for the season. Trey Mann is their do-it-all 6'5 combo guard, 16 points per game, shooting 40% from three. He had 30 in their last game against Tennessee. So he's the one you have to lock down. First and foremost, that Florida runs through him. And I feel like Virginia Tech is going to be able to do that. Virginia Tech is much more of a balanced squad. Tyrese Radford is back and he's playing well. You've got the leadership from Wabisa Beatty. I love Kaveh Aluma inside. I'm curious to see if Jalen Cohn is healthy by this time. He gives them some shooting off the bench, but I think Virginia Tech's going to win this game, Mac. I think that Florida is overseeded and Virginia Tech is underseeded.
I completely agree with you. And I think we're going to see a hungry team, a disrespected team. And, you know, Mike Young, he's going to have those guys popping. And the popcorn is going to be plentiful for those guys. I truly think Virginia Tech, again, another team that is going to make a little bit of noise and bust some brackets up. Kelly, how far do you have the Hokies going?
I think that they can beat Florida. But beyond that, I just said all these nice things about Virginia Tech. And then I see Ohio State.
Well, it's a tournament. It's tough. And seeding matters. Seeding can change everything.
It can. And that's why, you know, I am curious why Virginia Tech was a 10. I'd love to hear someone from the committee talk about it. Maybe we'll hear some more this week. I think I know why, just because their ACC schedule ended up being weaker. And of course, the ACC is down. And then they lost a lot of games down the stretch because of COVID pauses. And that really hurt them. Then they lost their first game in the ACC tournament. But I just don't see Florida at a 7. That really surprised me that Florida was way up there at a 7.
I agree with you. Let's move on to the West, our last ACC team, the ACC regular season champions, the last defending national champion, the number 4 seed, Virginia, going against a 13 seed in Ohio. Kelly, what are you seeing from this matchup?
Mac, I am concerned. I'm just going to say that. I'm concerned for Virginia. And I know I just said, I feel like some of these teams that are on COVID pauses, we are underrating them. Now, this is a Virginia team that struggled to beat Syracuse, who's an 11. And we know Syracuse is playing better ball, but they had the Reese Beekman shot, which was epic, by the way. What a play to have that buzzer beater and the Notre Dame buzzer beater in one tournament. Really a lot of fun. Ohio, their net ranking is 87. All right. They're the MAC champs. They don't have a single quad one win. But back on November 27th, way back, they lost at Illinois by 2. They played with Illinois, almost beat them. They average 80 points per game. They shoot 36% from three. They have 5 players averaging in double figures. Now, I'm not saying they're UMBC, okay? But point is, this Virginia team is not that Virginia team. So it wouldn't be as shocking. I don't know if I'm prepared right now to sit here and pick Ohio just because, Listen, just Max shocked. We don't know exactly what's going on with Virginia. So I feel like I have a little bit of an out here. I need to know who's playing. I don't think Reese Beekman's going to play. That's a huge difference maker for them. I don't know who else is out. But until we learn more, and we'll update you guys as we do a few more pods this week, we'll find out more about what's going on with Virginia. But right now, I am leaning Ohio in this game, Eric McLean. This is my big upset from the ACC set here. I have San Diego State beating Syracuse, and then I think this could be a problem situation for UVA.
Wow. I am utterly shocked.
Keep an eye on those Bobcats.
Wow. That's nuts. And I'm glad you know somebody's got to do it. Somebody's got to pick it if it happens. But I think Virginia gets all the way and plays Gonzaga, and then they run into that buzzsaw. So I think at the end of the day, the experience, the who they are as a team. Now, like everyone has said, this is not the defensive caliber that we're expected to see from Virginia. And there's a ton of reasons for why that is, but I don't know. It would feel wrong for me to say that Virginia is not going to make it that far, but it's happened before, and it wouldn't be as shocking as you said. Let's hit two teams, or maybe primarily one in Louisville, that are not participating in this tournament. We're not selected. It did just come out, kind of breaking news as we're doing this. Louisville and Duke declined the NIT. The NIT is kind of becoming the sub bowl, kind of
right.
deal where we don't want to play in that because of COVID. So it is interesting. Both of those teams not in. Kelly, how the heck is Louisville not in this tournament? Because I was fairly shocked, even more shocked than not, that they were not in.
Well, I think the big issue for Louisville, two issues for them. First of all, their resume was not that great. They only had one quad one win, 1-6 against quad one. That hurt them. And then what really hurt them was Georgetown somehow winning the Big East. Fade the Big East, by the way. I'm going with that. And Oregon State, who sometimes we forget exists, Oregon State won the Pac-12. So those were two automatic qualifiers. And that really hurt Louisville. And the way they were playing down the stretch, if you're comparing Louisville and Syracuse, Syracuse looks like a team that's figuring it out, that's hot, that's playing great ball. Louisville looks like, as I've said before, Carleek Jones and the Seven Dwarves. So I feel bad for my guy Carleek, who I have fought for all season long. And I think I can say this, Mac, because I have gained some trust and some goodwill with the Louisville faithful. Who do y'all think you are? You're turning down the NIT? Really? Like, come on, Louisville, play in the NIT. You're too good for the NIT? I don't think Louisville's too good for the NIT. I think they should play, considering they have so many young players that can get better. Some of those young post players, a Sam Williamson. We'll see if Carleek Jones is coming back. If he isn't, maybe he opts out of the NIT or whatever. But you get more time for your young nucleus to gel and get better. Louisville, you are not better than the NIT, at least not right now. Not in 2021, Eric McLean, and I've said my piece.
I've got to answer my phone. Luke Hancock is calling.
Oh, no.
Of the show. And he says, we play in the big dance or no dance, Kelly. That's who we are. And I agree with you. I never like when I see people not taking the opportunity to get guys better and to develop a young nucleus, like you just said. But in this COVID era, I guess I understand it. If it was a normal year, I'd be like you and hot frying.
It is COVID. You're right. You're right.
So if we're going to keep using that, let's keep using
it. Right. Exactly.
That's why. That's totally why. Guys, that's it for this episode. It was a ton of fun. Cannot wait for you guys to listen in to some of this coach talk that we have with the roundtable all throughout this weekend. If you haven't figured it out yet, we have an amazing producer on this show, Richmond Weaver. Go check out his podcast, Rich Take on Sports. It's a lot of fun, a lot of great guests. Literally any guest of any sport, of any part of life you want to listen to, Rich has it. You can go check out his on anywhere you listen to your podcast. And again, it's another great episode of Gramlich and McLean, brought to you by our friends over at Traeger Grills. Thank you guys for listening. If you haven't already, we told you at the front end, go to iTunes, subscribe to our podcast, drop us a little 5-star rating or review. Let's get to 100 by next week. We've got to do it. A big push right here, guys.
Let's go.
We would greatly appreciate your support. But until next time, we'll see y'all.